It's Between the Lines with Tristan and Jake, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill in downtown St. Petersburg, Sunday mornings from 11 until 12. A recording here joins in progress.
Well, we actually have a wager. Me, Jake, and our friend Aiden, we have a wager. I owe them $20 each if Dak Prescott wins Comeback Player of the Year this season. I bet that in the offseason. I believe where this all started.
Yes.
And I don't see a future for Dak in the NFL over past a few years. I really don't. He's not that much of a talent. And I equally dislike the Eagles as the same with the Cowboys. And I'm saying that in confidence that Dak Prescott is not a top five quarterback.
Give me the other three. You told me six. You've given me two.
Okay. Baker, Jalen Hurts, yep. Justin Herbert. I would have to say.
I mean, that one's close. I can give you that one, though.
Are we talking just this season?
Just this season.
Daniel Jones.
I also have Daniel Jones.
And I will give you. Are we talking?
I think you're forgetting a very big name. I'll say that.
Patrick Mahomes.
I had him just outside of the top five. I had him at six.
Who's the other big name I'm forgetting?
Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Josh Allen, I've got it as the number two quarterback.
Yeah, and I guess we're not counting injuries because then it would be, I would also say,
I don't have Lamar and Jaden Daniels. I don't have Lamar or Jaden Daniels on my list for that reason.
All right, well, getting to my hot take,
I also have Matthew Stafford above Dak Prescott as the number three quarterback in the league.
I see that.
But I want to give you some stats here on Dak Prescott this season. So this season, Dak Prescott, his quarterback rating is a 76.6, which puts him at third in the league. He has 1,356 yards, which puts him at second in the league. And his completion percentage is a 71.5, which puts him at tied for fifth. But I'm also counting Lamar, who's ahead of him, but he's missed the game. So you could argue that he would be fourth.
I have to say, if Lamar even was healthy right now, I don't know how he would be doing. Because if you look at that Baltimore offense, they have gotten off to an extremely historically slow start.
Yeah.
And obviously, the injuries that they've had have been almost near as bad as the Bucs.
I would say worse. The defense, every single one of their superstars on defense are out.
Yeah, well, defensively, without a doubt.
Yeah, defensively.
But offensively speaking, with Lamar,
the Bucs have it worse.
Comparison. Not saying that, you know, anyone has it necessarily like harder.
And the 49ers, who the Bucs play this week,
are also extremely injured.
Yes, extremely. This is a very scrappy football game we're about to watch.
Yeah, this is a whole scrappy season for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of very bad injuries. I mean, you have the Malik Nabers injury.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, and then you have the Bucs, Kalijah Kansi and Cody Mauch.
Yeah, Luke Goedeke, who, I mean, looking day by day, it looks like he might even be out for the season as well.
Yeah, which is just unfortunate to say. That entire right side of the Buccaneers offensive line is suffering right now. But getting to this take, this is a very sorrowful take. I don't want to have to give this take. And this is one that I might get some death threats for from a lot of Bucs fans. But it is just what I'm seeing as someone who watches a lot of football and watch a lot of Bucs football, is that Chris Godwin will not come back stronger than he was from this injury. And the reason I say that is because, one, he was on a generational run before that Baltimore Monday Night Football game when he got injured. And he was doing extremely well. His morale was super high. You could tell, like, his locker room presence, like, that's a big thing with the Buccaneers, and he was providing a lot on that end. But that injury, honestly, it looked like it shook him a little bit. And also, you have to talk about Emeka Egbuka and Jalen McMillan, who are Jalen McMillan's coming back from an injury, and not yet, but soon. And Emeka Egbuka is just having an insane offensive rookie of the year type rookie season. And so between them, Mike Evans, who could very well be retiring in the next couple of years.
I think he's done after this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, especially if he doesn't crack 1,000.
It just seems like the right time.
Especially.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the second year where he's missed multiple games due to a hamstring injury. And obviously, I do agree with that. I do think this very well could be his last season. But just saying in general, I don't think Chris Godwin comes back, at least in the next three seasons, as strong as he was before the injury.
He'll be 33 by then.
Yeah, before the injury. I think there's a very good chance that he plays out and he performs a little bit, and he has, I would say, maybe median or average seasons for Chris Godwin and what we've seen from him in the past, which has been nothing short of great for us or for the Buccaneers. But, yeah, I don't think he goes on one of those generational superstar runs like we were seeing that season right before he got injured, just because of the, you know, the touches that are being spread across this offense, and also just the, you know, the morale aspect, and also how quickly, he wasn't rushed back from his injury, but if you think about it, he was cleared from his injury. That was the game against the Eagles. He was cleared against his injury on, I believe, Wednesday, and then he was playing in that Sunday 1 p.m. game. So that was only, what, like 2 days of practice maybe? And so I think that process of rushing him back extremely fast like that was, you know, maybe not the best for him overall. I think the Bucs were looking at that game and they're saying, you know what, if Chris can come back and be that player that we need him to be, we need him more than anything. And that's what they wanted against the Eagles, which didn't really pan out.
So I agree with you that he's not going to come back and be as good of a player as he was, especially because he was having the best season of his entire career. But I do also want to say that, which he is out this week with a fibula injury, which they say is separate from his original injury. I think when it gets later in the season, we're getting Mike Evans back as soon as next week. We're getting Jalen McMillan back as soon as after the bye. I think they're going to let Chris Godwin take that extra rest, play 40% of snaps, and I think that's going to help him truly get back to close to where he was, even though he was on pace for the best season of his career and the best receiving season in the entire league.
Definitely, yeah. I hate to say it, and that was one of those things where, you know, like, I hate to give that hot take, because, you know, many people are still very high on him, and I am still very high on him. I enjoy watching Chris Godwin football a lot. He's definitely a football guy. However, yeah, it's just, especially if you look at his, how he's been playing the last, like, since he came back from the injury, and just to interrupt this super quick,
definitely
the second half of this Denver New York Jets game is kicking off right now in London. We just watched the kickoff here in the studio in Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, right off of Central in St. Petersburg, Florida,
right across from Tropicana Field,
right across from the Gray Lady, who is getting rebuilt as we speak. I mean, boy, I am so excited.
I think over 12 panels now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's 12 to 24, 12 out of 24. Yeah, yeah, so it's exactly half. We're halfway there. It's just the home stretch.
And I think this new ownership is really going to take it to the next level, and we'll talk about the new ownership of the Rays later.
Yeah, I am very excited to discuss Patrick Zalewski and the new ownership group. They honestly, I have some mixed opinions on them, but, I mean, what can you compare them to other than Stu Sternberg?
So, yeah.
Next segment of the show, what would the next segment of the show be?
Now, I've got a list of players here, and I want to do this. Who is better, Emeka Egbuka or the wide receiver that I'm going to name?
Okay.
All right, so I've got a tier one here, and this is going to be the kind of easier ones, and it's going to get harder and harder as we go. A.J. Brown.
Are we talking just this season?
Just, I mean, what else do we have to go off based on Emeka?
Emeka Egbuka.
I agree. Drake London.
The bias is kind of shown here.
Yeah.
But Emeka Egbuka.
Also, Drake London hasn't been very good this season.
Yeah,
he has not been what he was
last. If we're looking
season.
At just this season, yeah. Emeka Egbuka takes him, you know, 10.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Nico Collins.
No, well, going back to the last one, if we're talking about in a basketball 1v1, I am taking Drake London, because Drake London did play basketball at USC. He was very good. What was the next one?
Nico Collins. Again, another guy who's kind of
Nico
that's
Collins.
Kind of the trend with the first three. Really?
Nico Collins.
You're going to take Nico Collins over Emeka Egbuka.
I am so high on Emeka Egbuka. I love Emeka Egbuka, and I think he is the rawest pure talent NFL receiver, or one of, if not the most raw talent receivers in the NFL. But I do have to take Nico Collins just for the playmaking ability over the middle.
Now, let me...
And I know you're about to bring up stats.
Yes, I am.
Yes,
I am.
But if we're talking about raw playmaking ability over the middle, especially with the quarterback that they're dealing with just this season...
I would argue that... I mean, obviously, C.J. Stroud isn't as good as Baker Mayfield, but you're comparing Emeka Egbuka...
Less tenured. He's done less in the league overall. He's done less in the playoffs. He's really not that good of a quarterback. And, like, he's a great quarterback for his age, But like if you look at who's just getting, who's throwing the ball to these guys, Nico Collins takes it.
Now, I'm going to go against that, and I'm going to say why. So I'm going to bring up stats, and then actually here. So he's got 312 yards, which Emeka Egbuka has about 450. He has 3 touchdowns. Emeka Egbuka has 5. Now, with Nico Collins, he has nobody to take away touches from him. Mm-hmm. Emeka Egbuka, although this week is the primary receiver with Sterling Shepard behind him, which is not very hard competition, even though Sterling Shepard has been amazing. Nico Collins has Jaden Higgins as his number 2. And Emeka Egbuka had to deal with being not only a rookie, and he had to deal with being behind a guy like Mike Evans, and now behind Chris Godwin, who won't be this week, but last week and the last few weeks, is behind him on the depth chart. And then when a guy like Jalen McMillan comes back, who's already proven in the league, I mean, although that hasn't happened yet, I'm still going to take Emeka Egbuka over Nico Collins.
Yeah, you know what? You kind of convinced me. And I mean, like just going back and looking at Nico Collins' rookie season, and I know we're just comparing stats from this season, but Nico Collins' rookie season, he had like 400-something yards. He had like 1 touchdown. So obviously, like you're saying, just this year. But even then, Nico Collins is older and he's like
26. He's at the prime age for a receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was trying to combat the bias of that question. Yeah. But yeah, Emeka Egbuka, honestly, just statistically.
Won you over there.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
All right, now this is the second tier. There's 5 tiers that I have. This one's going to be 2 players, all right? Romo Dunze.
Oh, Emeka Egbuka.
That one gets a little close for me. Romo Dunze has been phenomenal this season.
Yes, and he has, but I know I'm struggling keeping it in just this year, but if you look at Romo Dunze's rookie year, he had a very rough rookie year.
Yes, but if you look
at
this
season,
he was
also behind Keenan Allen and also DJ Moore. Yeah. Overall, just if we're talking about talent, just Emeka Egbuka.
And stats. I mean, I'm taking Emeka Egbuka either way, but I also do want to point out that you can't compare stats to each other unless you do the first 4 weeks, because last week was Romo Dunze's bye week.
Yeah.
So you can't just take away one guy's played one more game and it's not an injury kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just this way the schedule worked. Okay, the second player I have for tier 2, Davante Adams.
That's a tough one if we're talking like the retrospect of their career, like overall, like the trajectory of it. But if we're talking just the season, I'm going to go with Emeka Egbuka.
I also agree. Now, tier 3, this is where it starts to get kind of hard. We're not going to talk about injuries here because both of these guys are injured.
Okay.
So based on what we know they're able to do and what they've done.
Okay.
Mike Evans or Emeka Egbuka.
Okay, this goes back to like saying, okay, and I feel like you already might know what my answer is going to be. But last season, if you asked me before Chris Godwin's injury who I thought should have been wide receiver 1, I would have told you Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
So I gotta say Emeka Egbuka, because like
I also agree.
I love Mike Evans. Mike Evans is a generational player. Mike Evans will have banners. First ballot Hall of Famer. Mike
Absolutely.
Evans will have his name on Raymond James Stadium by the time when he retires.
The day he retires, it needs to be inducted there.
But if we're talking about like just this season, and we're talking about raw talent, and we're talking about, I know you use that word a lot, but if we're just, you know. It has to be Emeka Egbuka, because who has Baker's number 1 target this season been?
Emeka Egbuka, and that's even when Mike Evans was here.
Yep.
It was Emeka Egbuka, Emeka Egbuka.
He's been scoring touchdowns since preseason.
Yeah, it's been all season with that. And now I'm going to go to another guy who's gotten injured but is going to come back this season a little bit later than Mike Evans, but CeeDee Lamb.
CeeDee Lamb.
That one got close for me. That was the closest one so far. CeeDee Lamb is a generational talent. But I'm going to tell you the reason that I am going to go with Emeka Egbuka over CeeDee Lamb as a wide receiver, and it's the drops for me. CeeDee Lamb is a complete workhorse. He's an amazing route runner, but he leads the league in drops since he's entered it.
Okay, and I know this might be a little hard for you because I know you do like Dak Prescott a lot, but here's the point I'm about to make. Swap CeeDee Lamb and Emeka Egbuka, all right? CeeDee Lamb in Tampa being thrown to Baker Mayfield, he goes for 1,200 yards. He scores over 10 touchdowns. Easy. If he's healthy the whole season. And now let me finish.
Okay.
If Emeka Egbuka is on the Dallas Cowboys, he could have a similar season to that. I don't think he would be on the run he's on right now.
Now, I'm going to counteract you and kind of go to receiver rooms here. I think CeeDee Lamb has a worse season with Baker Mayfield than he would with Dak Prescott, and it's simply because of how deep this Bucs wide receiver room is, even if you take Emeka Egbuka out.
That's a good point. I just don't agree with that because CeeDee Lamb is one of those guys. Like, there's a reason why Mike Evans is our wide receiver one still and not our wide receiver two. It's because of his, like, I hate to use this term, but, like, his authority, like, his aura.
Yeah.
The thing is CeeDee Lamb is going to be the wide receiver one in Tampa. I'm saying in the hypothetical that
absolutely would be.
And he would be still getting wide receiver one targets if he was healthy.
You also got to think a guy like Mike Evans is also going to be getting open, and a guy like Chris Godwin is also going to be getting open. And when Jalen McMillan comes back, he would be getting open versus what?
The thing is, Emeka Egbuka, I don't think he would be performing at the same rate as CeeDee Lamb because I don't think Emeka Egbuka has seen double coverage like CeeDee Lamb sees this season.
Oh, he sees
yet.
Double coverage.
He sees double coverage now. He sees double coverage now.
Now
but at the start of the
Mike
season,
Evans went out, but he at started
the
seeing it.
Yeah, but before Mike Evans went out and the start of the season and stuff, like Emeka Egbuka, he was still performing at a high level. Don't get me wrong. He was performing at a high level. He was performing at an extremely high level, and he still is now that he's seeing a lot more double coverages and spies on defense trying to just grab and, you know, double cover him. But I do think if they were in the exact same situation, CeeDee versus Emeka Egbuka, I think CeeDee takes the cake on that one.
We can agree to disagree there.
Yeah, I think we have to. It's very neck and neck, which is surprising considering Emeka Egbuka is a rookie wide receiver.
Yeah, it's insane.
That is insane.
Now, I'm going to go on to the next tier here. I've got Amon-Ra St. Brown.
I'm going to take Emeka Egbuka.
I'm also going to take Emeka Egbuka pretty easily. Yeah. Now, this one, Malik Nabers before the injury.
Oh, that's a good one. That's another
good
one.
I'm taking Malik Nabers. I'll say it.
Yeah.
I think he was the best wide receiver in the league before that injury, other than maybe Puka Nacua.
I don't know. Well, okay, do you have Brian Thomas on there?
No, I do not.
Would you take Brian Thomas or Emeka Egbuka?
Absolutely not.
You would take Emeka?
I would take Emeka Egbuka, easily.
Yeah, I would take Emeka Egbuka over Brian Thomas. I don't know if...
Brian Thomas has not performed this year at all.
Yeah, like this year's... Yeah, you know what? We are talking this year. Before the injury, though, I would still have to take Emeka Egbuka.
I still disagree.
Because even Malik Nabers before the injury... He wasn't having a season like he did last season.
No, he was.
He was on a good run, but he wasn't.
He was the number one wide receiver, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah. Like, I just thought I'd stick him at Emeka Egbuka because the overall kind of, like, I don't know, just the consistency. I feel like Malik Nabers, I don't know. I feel like there was a reason why Malik Nabers was receiving all of those targets.
And it's because Darius Slayton is the wide receiver, too.
Yeah.
We can agree on that.
Yeah. And so I just have to stick him at Emeka Egbuka because the... Emeka Egbuka is fighting to get targets out of what you just said is an incredible wide receiver room because it
absolutely
is.
Absolutely.
And Malik Nabers was really just farming targets off of a crappy wide receiver room. You know, like he obviously...
But he's also a phenomenal receiver.
Obviously, he was going to get the ball because he... I mean, all you got to do is put it up
clear
in a zip
wide
code.
Receiver.
You got to put it up in a zip code and you got
it.
But, yeah, I would still definitely take Emeka. I think we have to agree to disagree on that one, too.
Yeah, and that's fine. Now, next is Ja'Marr Chase. This is where it starts to get really hard.
Ja'Marr Chase.
I disagree. Based on what they've done this season,
Ja'Marr
Chase has had the horrible quarterback play, but...
If Joe Burrow was healthy...
Look when Joe Burrow was here.
If Joe Burrow was still healthy, if Joe Burrow did not have turf toe, I do legitimately think, like, Ja'Marr Chase... Okay, here's the thing. Here's the difference between Malik Nabers and Ja'Marr Chase, all right? Malik Nabers can have, like, a really good last season and can have, like, an all right this season or a really good this season or a really... mediocre this season, like you can see kind of like Brian Thomas. Like Brian Thomas had a really good season last year. Obviously, these are young guys compared to Ja'Marr Chase, who's been in the league for a couple years now. But you know, like Brian Thomas can have a very bad season, and then he can immediately, or a very good season, and then he can immediately go and have a very bad season, or so far was a bad season. Ja'Marr Chase, with the season he had last year, the offensive line that Joe Burrow had,
I could agree with that.
I mean, you just there's never like. If Ja'Marr Chase had just consistent quarterback play with somewhat consistent offensive line, he would literally if he produced half of the numbers that he did last season, he would still be a top 10 receiver in the league.
Ooh, I don't know about
top
10.
He would.
Top 15 probably.
Top 15. I was a little over-exaggerating, but I would take Ja'Marr Chase.
I'm saying based on the stats this year, I'm taking Emeka Egbuka. But we'll move on to tier five. We'll go with Justin Jefferson.
Ooh, if we're talking about just this year.
Justin Jefferson, the first four games of the season, did not perform anywhere near to a Ja'Marr or Justin Jefferson level. So I'm going to take Emeka Egbuka, but that's the closest one by far for me.
Yeah, if we're talking about just this year, shout out to John, by the way. Happy birthday. He said, I'm in love with Tristan Kennedy in the YouTube chat. but what was that you were saying?
Just Justin Jefferson is the closest to for me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think CD is the closest for me. Like, if he was healthy.
It's close, yeah.
But I would... Yeah, I gotta say, going back to that thing with, like, what if you swapped their positions? Like, if Justin Jefferson's on the books, like, Justin Jefferson's literally, like...
Yeah, but, I mean, you can't...
Going
you can't,
for a million yards.
We're not like, Justin Herbert. We can't just keep saying, what if?
Yeah.
We can't just keep saying, what if?
Yeah, there's a lot of hypotheticals going on here. Done. Like, this entire show has been based upon hypotheticals so far, so I think we should roll to the next segment before...
All right, I've got two more guys for you.
Okay, okay.
Because I think these are the two best receivers in the league, and I'm going to say this before I even say their names. I think they're better than Emeka Egbuka. Jaxon Smith-Njigba.
No.
All right.
I don't think Jaxon Smith-Njigba is.
He has been a phenomenal player, and I think.
I think so. Yeah.
I think he's better than.
I don't.
I think. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to keep bringing up hypotheticals, so I'm not going to. But then Puka Nacua, we can both agree, is better than Emeka Egbuka.
Yes, I can agree.
Having
with
that. An NFL record level season so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Puka Nacua is one of those guys that comes around every once in a while. Like, he really is.
Yeah. In a fifth-round draft pick. That's what's so phenomenal about it.
Like, he literally could be the Tom Brady of wide receivers for all we know.
All right, now we're going to move on to the next segment. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that we're both wearing jerseys. And this is going to be the jerseys on our back segment. We're both going to highlight one player with the jersey that we're wearing and give some phenomenal stats about them. Now, do you want to go first?
I'll let you go first because I know you want to talk about Mike Evans.
Absolutely. I'm wearing a Mike Evans jersey. And let me just read some stats off for you here. He is 22nd all-time in receiving yards at 12,824, which is still here to grow because he's still playing. 34th all-time in receptions. Again, still getting more. 9th all-time in receiving touchdowns, which is now tied with Devontae Adams, by the way. But I think as soon as Mike Evans comes back, he's gonna push out Devontae Adams in a landslide. And he is one of three players all-time to be the team leader in points scored. Every other team is a kicker. Three teams have a player, whether it's a running back, receiver, quarterback. I know Barry Sanders is one. I couldn't find the other. And Mike Evans is one.
Yeah.
And then he has 11 straight 1,000-yard seasons, which everybody knows. He's pushing for 12. It's going to be hard. He's injured right now.
Do you know who led the Bucs in scores before Mike Evans?
Martin Gramatica.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Yeah, look at that
Absolutely.
Ball knowledge. I love Martin. And his son.
USF.
Yeah, USF kicker. Best kicker in college football right now. For me, I chose Andre Vasilevsky, the Tampa Bay Lightning goaltender. I am a big Lightning fan, as with most Tampa Bay sports. But I chose Andre Vasilevsky just kind of as I want to give the Lightning a little stroke of luck. Just because, you know, the Lightning are 0-2 as we speak, which is not good, especially after losing to the Devils and the Senators. Andre Vasilevsky, here's some statistics for you. He won the Vezina Trophy in 2019. He won the Conn Smythe Trophy in 2021. And he has two Stanley Cups under his belt. He's the best tender, if not one of the best tenders in the league. He is my personal favorite Lightning player. I love Andre Vasilevsky to death. Love Big Cat. I don't know. The proof is really in the pudding with him. You watch some of his best saves on YouTube. You can go on YouTube, search up a highlight for some of his best saves. And it really is just something else. Moving into our next segment right now. We have the college football recap, all right? Last night, it was Saturday night. Today, Sunday morning, for those of you just tuning in, don't maybe know that. Ohio State Ohio State scored 34 on number 17 Illinois, 16 to 6. It was 34 to 16. Alabama won over Mizzou, 27 to 24. Pitt shocked Florida State a little bit. They won 34 to 31. Ole Miss beat Washington State 24 to 21. Indiana beat Oregon 30 to 20. Texas beat Oklahoma 23 to 6. Notre Dame beat NC State 36 to 7. Tennessee beat Arkansas 34 to 31. Texas A&M beat Florida 34 to 17. Watch that one. It was a pretty good game, actually. Georgia beat Auburn 20 to 10. I watched that one last night. That was a rough one to watch, that Auburn-Georgia game. That was...
I watched a little bit of it.
I was kind of going in between the Cubs, Brewers, and Auburn, Bama, and Auburn, Georgia.
Yep.
And it was I was really rooting for Auburn. I have to say, especially in that first half, they came out 10-3. It was very good, but then they just kind of fell off the back end there.
Yeah.
It was really upsetting. USC beat Michigan 31-13, which honestly, it shocked me a little bit. I thought Michigan had a bigger, had a better shot at that, especially being number 15th in the nation. What about you? Do you have any thoughts on this?
Now, I've got a game here for you, and this is the local team for us. The South Florida Bulls won 54-26 over Charlotte, but that was on Friday night.
Yeah. Well, it was University of North Texas.
Oh, I'm on the wrong game here then.
Yeah. They beat them
63-36 was the game on Friday.
Yes.
Which USF is ranked 24. I think we're going to be seeing that get a big jump here.
I hope so. See, the thing is, they I don't know if it's going to be a necessarily big jump because
I think up to 18 around.
I don't know, cuz UNT, they are an American Athletic Conference school, and so
but you've got to look at how they beat them.
Yeah.
Although it was a close game in the first half.
Yeah, like obviously the committee, they look at how the game's played out. They look at the point spread. Did you know that the point spread for that game, they had UNT by a point and a half?
That's crazy.
That was insane.
For
looking
what
at
USF
that point
has
spread,
done this game this season.
Exactly.
It's just,
I mean,
what are the thoughts there?
They were beat pretty bad by Miami, but that's the only loss they've had all season. Keep in mind, they've beat two ranked opponents.
Yeah,
in Boise State and Florida earlier in the year. And they blew Charlotte out of the water. When I was in Baltimore for that game. I was watching from a pub in, I don't even know. It was in like the harbor of Baltimore. Not important. But this USF team has been on an incredible run these last
few
weeks.
Absolutely. Byron Brown, phenomenal quarterback.
Byron Brown, he is just... He's looking like a Heisman candidate out there. Like, I don't necessarily know if he is, but he's looking like one without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I do think that this South Florida team has a shot at a playoff or at a postseason run in the college football playoffs. At least one game win.
Yeah, you know? I agree. We're going to move on to the Bucks predictions for the game starting at 4:25 against the San Francisco 49ers. Now, I want to start off by reading you a bit of an injury report here. Because this, I mean, if you looked at the injury report, just the picture of it, it is long. I'm scrolling out on my computer here, and it doesn't even all fit on the same screen.
What That's, a joke.
Like, it's insane. So I'm going to read the players that are out for the Bucks, and then I want you to give me your thoughts on it. So okay. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin Jr., Bucky Irving, Zion McCollum, Benjamin Morrison, and Josh Williams. Any concerns?
Well, obviously, you just have the main ones, like Mike Evans, Chris Godwin Jr., you know, like, those are receivers that you need, usually.
Bucky Irving, the run game was horrible last
week.
Bucky
Irving, can we go back to last week? Can we talk about the drop tackle? Or no, that wasn't last week. 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yes.
The Bucky Irving drop tackle.
What a joke.
That was the missed
And it was the same
call?
Thing that happened to Chris Godwin.
Exactly.
Both players got injured,
and,
one got
but the,
fined.
The difference is now it's banned, and they still didn't call it.
Godwin got happened.
Oh, it was 2 seasons ago that got banned?
Yeah.
I thought it was last season.
Godwin got hip drop tackled. They fined Roquan Smith, who tackled Chris Godwin, and then they took the fine away after he appealed it and said it wasn't a hip drop tackle, even though he grabbed him by his hips and just fell to the ground, which is the definition of a hip drop tackle.
There's a reason that this there's a reason the hip drop tackle got banned. It's just because it's the most devastating form it's not even a good form tackle.
It's just the easiest way to get a guy injured.
Exactly. It's the easiest way to get a guy injured, get a guy down, no effort, no real football playing there. It's really just it's filthy. It's not good sportsmanship. Yeah. And you see guys getting injured over and over and over again because of these hip drop tackles. So they finally banned it. But now they're being so lenient on it. They're not calling it. And even with the tush push last season was debated, last offseason was debated if they should ban it or not, because the Eagles, the team that run it the most out of anyone, they were kind of almost exploiting the fact that you're able to jump a little offsides when you run that play, because it's
and
a play
up the gut.
And I
think some people are overreacting on that. Like, yes, they do false start pretty much every time on it, but it's by almost, you could even say, nanoseconds. Like, you can't even, the refs by the human eye, you can't even tell, and you can't review plays for flags, so there's really not much room there.
Yeah.
It's just, like...
I mean, I just think the officiating overall should tighten up. As someone who's watched the Buccaneers this season, like every single game that they've been on the field, this season has been rough with the referees.
Especially
with the Buccaneers.
Jets game,
any
flags.
Fan of any team can just go out and say, oh my God, the refs are horrible. The refs have been so bad. That's why we're... But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 4-1, ladies and gentlemen, and we are still talking about these.
And
referees.
I'm going to say this: they would be 5-0 if they didn't get that punt blocked against the Eagles.
That
shifted the entire momentum.
Yeah.
That let the Eagles take control of the game. And then once the second half came out, the Bucs really showed that they are still that elite team.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles. Okay, obviously it was a momentum game, as every NFL game really is.
Yeah.
But that game, if the Bucs. Grabbed onto some momentum halfway through the game, in the middle portions of the game, the Buccaneers looked like a solid team, because they really are. They're a solid team.
Yeah.
But it's the little things. It really is the very little intricate parts of the game that affect everything for the Buccaneers. And that's why, partially, I think that it's had to come down to...
It's the hot starts that we've
been
getting on.
The last one-minute drive, of the game. And that's why the Buccaneers have won every single game they've played in the last minute.
Yeah. Now I'm going to read the players that are out for the 49ers here. And I'm going to go through every single one of them. And there's a lot. So you've got, I'm going to butcher this name, but Yetur Gross-Matos,
mm-hmm.
Kevin Givens. Those two, I'm not familiar with them, to be honest. And then this is where it kind of gets important for them. Ricky Pearsall and Brock Purdy are both out, along with Jordan Watkins.
Sticky Ricky Pearsall, man. I remember watching him when he played at Florida. He was... And he got shot. That was pretty unfortunate. But that was when he got drafted by the 49ers.
That's a dark turn.
Yeah, that was kind of out of nowhere. I my bad. But
now,
I think Ricky Pearsall, this is kind of a tangent of that. Ricky Pearsall's upside in the league. Ricky Pearsall is
first
such
round
a
pick.
Good receiver, dude. Anyone that doesn't necessarily isn't familiar with Ricky Pearsall's game, go and watch his senior year highlights from Florida. Dude is a monster. I mean, dude comes down with the ball like dude looks like prime George Pickens, like, but that one catch a year George Pickens make where it's like,
yeah,
across
absolutely
the body, behind the head, like, but that's like every catch he has to make. And then I don't know, but yeah, the injuries on both sides are going to be really affecting these teams. Like you said earlier in the show, it's going to be a very scrappy football game.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of I'm very excited to see the Kevin Stefanski, like the game planning and like the pre-snap motions, the eye candy. I'm really excited to see what Josh Grizzard comes out with.
Yeah.
Every week, that's kind of the nice thing about having a new offensive coordinator, is every single week you're just getting a little taste of like what this guy's intelligence, this guy's like game planning, what he sees from the other team. I wonder if he's going to adapt to the 49ers injuries early on, or if he's going to keep a game plan that would be more standard with, like, if he was still playing everyone that was healthy. I imagine, you know, what makes these coaches good, what makes these guys, you know, the one, you know, there's one offensive coordinator, there's 32 offensive coordinators in the NFL, 32 defense, not necessarily because of head coaches and whatnot, but there's a limited position.
Yeah.
What makes these guys special, what makes these guys have these positions, is their ability to adapt and overcome. And I am excited to see what Josh Grizzard brings out for these 49ers on Today.
Now, I want to say something. Obviously, the 49ers are missing key receivers. They're missing Brandon Ayuk, who's on the injury report. He's on the injury list. So he's not playing no matter what. Not that he's ruled out. He's just on the injury reserve.
Yeah.
And then also, Ricky Pearsall, who we just talked about, is injured. But then you go ahead and take a look, and you would think, wow, the Bucs have it easy. But then they're missing two of their three top outside corners in Zion McCollum and Benjamin Morrison. Do you have any concerns with Josh Hayes going up against a guy like Kendrick Bourne?
Yes, actually. I think our secondary is kind of starting, with all these injuries, our secondary is kind of starting to look more like it did last season.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was last season. It was injury-ridden.
And defense. It wasn't that they were not good enough players. It's just when you bring backups in, no matter what, they're not going to perform as good. Almost ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of hard because, you know, when you haven't been starting all season, you haven't been getting touches all season, or playing time
all
season.
It's like Chris Godwin. Although he had months or a year pretty much without practicing, you kind of get rusty, not as the fact that you haven't played in a while for them, but it's a new feel. Game speed is different than practice speed.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have my father, Ray Kennedy, in the comments of this stream. He is saying, Jesus, today will be a test for the Bucks, but win these games. The experience, but others filling in, could play dividends for the postseason. Great teams will always overcome the injuries. It's the culture in the locker room that determines overcoming adversity.
I agree with that.
He said, like and subscribe to Between the Lines and join the team. I agree with that a lot. Yeah, you need to do that right now if you're tuning in and watching. Other than that,
get some body armor and Coca-Cola. Sports Bar and Grill.
We are here at First Sports Bar and Grill, and just off of Central, across the street, across First Avenue from the Tropicana Field, which is, like we said earlier, being rebuilt. Let's talk about the MLB postseason a little bit.
I agree. MLB postseason, there's been some exciting games. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll start off with the game that happened last night with the Cubs and the Brewers.
Definitely.
Got any takeaways from that? I know you said you were watching.
Oh, yeah. I was watching. I cannot believe that outcome. The Cubs were fighting tooth and nail to stay in this, the postseason. They were really trying. You could tell. I have to say, their bullpen rotation is nails. Other than, I'm blanking on him right now.
Colin Ray?
Kittredge. Maybe. Andrew Kittredge. Other than Kittredge.
Oh, Ray's legend.
Yeah, Ray's legend. But other than Kittredge, Kittredge was kind of the one that really put the nail in the coffin for the Cubs, I feel, late in that, like, seventh inning.
He's on the... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he got traded from the Orioles to the Cubs right before the deadline. Yeah. I love Andrew Kittredge. I loved him when he was a Ray. I even liked him when he was on the Orioles. Were we at the game when Andrew Kittredge pitched for the Orioles?
I believe so.
Yeah, I remember.
I believe so.
Because I definitely was there.
We went to a lot of Rays games.
We did go to quite a few Rays games at Steinbrenner Field this last season. Thank God we will never have to go back to that field.
Horrible.
I do not like Steinbrenner Field, not one bit. I guess thanks,
it was the
Yankees
president that was.
I guess.
Some people are acting like we didn't pay them $15 million.
Exactly. I don't know why we paid them $15 million and then continued to have the thank you Yankees written all over the stadium. That was
throughout the whole season, that's insane.
Yeah, that was a little much.
The fact that was up there for so long is disgusting.
Yeah.
But I want to move on to the Brewers, and I'm going to kind of question them a little bit here. Now, they went with five pitchers, which doesn't sound too bad.
Comes with like a trillion.
When you go into a game five, which... in this scenario was an elimination game, your next game, you're going to need bullpen arms no matter what. You always need bullpen arms.
Yeah.
When you go with a full bullpen game in an elimination game that isn't the World Series, I don't understand what you're trying to do, because now you've got guys that are playing on fatigue. Obviously, they don't have a game today. They have a day off. But it gets to a point where are you just hoping your starter can go seven innings and you can take the load off your bullpen? Because now you've got a bunch of guys shorted on rest.
If I was managing either teams, like, I do like the approach. Okay, well, you kind of saw this where the Cubs were running out of pitchers that were,
the Cubs did the same
postseason thing.
But
I honestly, I really like the idea that in the postseason you give less reps, more games. Does that make sense? Like less reps for starters, less reps for...
Yeah.
Just rotate guys
and
more.
There's so much rest in between games because the MLB wants more streaming and more people to watch these games at this time instead of two games being on mm-hmm. so that people can watch every single game and the viewership's higher. It's smart.
Exactly. So I think it's a better idea overall to rotate your pitchers as much as possible, even if you have to get down to, I would say, if it's a problem that you're feeling like you're going to run out of pitchers, I would say go for the lesser talents earlier. See, as a litmus test.
Which, I'll say this, the Brewers didn't do. They immediately went with Abner Uribe, who's one of their best relief pitchers, maybe the best, I would say. Then, what confused me is they started the game out with a bullpen game. They went Abner Uribe, Chad Patrick, Trevor Miguel, Aaron Ashby, all phenomenal pitchers, right?
Yeah.
And then they went to Jacob Mizorowski for four innings to close the game out. And what I'm confused about is why not start a guy like Jacob Mizorowski who gets his routine by getting ready, stretching for hours before the game, and then going with a guy like Chad Patrick and then closing the game out with Abner Uribe, who's used to that short rest and getting up quick and throwing and then getting out there immediately.
And I think this is almost where a lot of, like, and this sounds weird, but like later in the season when you have to make any moves, like younger guys, farm system guys, like guys that have been through it before, like,
That's almost a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah, not like big moments, because big moments are completely different in the MLB. Like, big moments will shake everything, especially
the average
players.
Moment in the MLB is about as big of a moment in AAA.
Yeah, pretty much.
Typically.
But I have to say, like, when you have younger guys that have been through the farm system, that have kind of been wrung out, kind of been like treated maybe not the best, or like
gone
just had to deal with
reliever.
A lot. Yeah, and they've dealt with it before, and they can handle their emotions. They know what they're gonna bring.
Yeah.
I think that's when you got to use them. You got to use them early in the game, like I said, as a litmus test. Kind of dip your feet in the water, see who you're playing with, see what kind of game it is. Because in the postseason, you know, you'll have games that are super offense. Like, you'll have games like the first Blue Jays game against the Yankees, where they were like 14-1 them.
Oh,
but then
Yankees,
like,
got killed. That was awesome to watch.
Oh, that was beautiful. And I don't like the Blue Jays, but I gotta say, I have the Blue Jays winning it all, taking it home.
I'll say this. I want the Mariners to win just because I want Randy to have success. But
I
do
agree.
Too. I think the Blue Jays are a much better team.
I think the Blue Jays got it this
year. I think the Mariners are way too top heavy. I think they rely way too much on the top of the order and their starting pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, good teams figure out a way. But I think the Blue Jays are just gonna take it easily.
Definitely. Yeah, I have to say the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays got it. The Blue Jays, they look so solid this year. They've done nothing but, you know, like earlier in the season in the regular.
And I'm the guy that said the Blue Jays were getting lucky. If you look at expected win-loss, the Blue Jays were, I think, only one game better than the Rays
mm-hmm.
at the end of the season. And run differential, too, you can bring up all these things, but the Blue Jays, at the end of the day, they figured out how to win games and they did it.
Yeah, and
that's,
did you
that's
see?
All it is.
Did you see Vlad at the end of that last game? How
oh,
happy
yeah.
he was!
He was saying the Yankees lose.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. I forget what it was.
It was with David Ortiz.
Yeah, do you remember when
it was the Yankees lose? He said
and 30 times. And Derek Jeter was just there, and he was so they got mad.
Yeah, him and A-Rod.
Yeah, yep, him and A-Rod. Yeah. And do you remember when Vlad said, like, I forget what it was, but it was a couple years ago. Vlad was like, I would never sign with the Yankees, not even dead.
And then there was also a conversation. He was at, I believe, what was a charity event. Somebody, a little girl, asked him, what's the easiest team to go against? And it was a bunch of Blue Jays players there. Nobody wanted to answer. And Vlad immediately raised his hand, and it was like, the Yankees. And so it's been a long time coming. I bet you that was maybe the best day of his life.
One of the craziest parts of this last MLB season was I went to a Blue Jays Rays game, and I was with my dad, and I caught a ball. A junior Caminero threw me a ball that was hit off the bat of Vlad. So if they do,
that ball was probably bruised.
Join us this Sunday at 11 o'clock on the Florida Sports Stream channel, streaming at RadioSaintPete.com for Between the Lines with Tristan and Jake, broadcast live from Ferg Sports Bar in downtown St. Petersburg. Between the Lines, Sunday morning at 11 on the Florida Sports Stream channel.